You're listening to a Sunday sermon from Seven Mile Road Church in Melrose, Massachusetts, just north of Boston. To check out more about us, go to 7milemelrose.com.
As I drove to school one sunny morning when I was 15 years old, I had a car accident. It was legal for me to be driving at that point, but it was probably not so wise, right? We can look back and say it's maybe not that wise. Because as I reached the top of a hill that morning, the car in front of me stopped for a reason I still don't understand. And I didn't see them until it was too late because of the glare. And I still remember my confusion and jumping out of the car to ask the other driver, "Why did you stop?" To which she should have replied, "Why did you not?" And I remember after that arriving at school and going to a payphone. Again, I'm telling you how long ago this was. I went to a payphone and I called my parents and let them know what had happened. And fortunately, no one was injured. That's great. But I also remember walking down the street that night with my dad and telling him, "That's it. I'm never driving again." So at that moment, I felt guilty for running into someone. I realized my inadequacy as a driver. I knew the danger of me behind the wheel, and I never wanted to feel that again. I'd messed up, so I felt like giving up on driving forever. I felt what it was like to do wrong as a driver, and I never wanted to feel that way again. And this was before Uber, so this was a massive decision, right? But after that accident, I was afraid of driving, and I wanted to turn aside. I'd messed up, so I wanted to give up. Now, maybe you haven't had a car accident. It's awesome if you have not. It's a terrible feeling if you do. But maybe you haven't had a car accident. So maybe you don't know that particular circumstance, but I'm fairly certain that there's been something in your life that you've messed up pretty badly. Maybe you were at the gym and really thought you could hit that fifth rep on the bench press at 225, and you really thought you didn't need a spotter. But when that bar started drifting towards your throat, right, you realized it was a bad decision, and you vowed to never enter a weight room again. You messed up, so you wanted to give up. Maybe it was at school, and you failed a math test so badly that you added to your life by subtracting math from it forever. You turned aside from math because you messed up so badly that you wanted to give up. Or maybe it was at home, right? Maybe you let your family down really bad with a terrible decision, or a bad attitude, or a run of selfishness, and it just destroyed trust. And it made the relationships that were most important to you so hard that you were afraid where things were going. And so you wanted to turn aside from the people closest to you. So maybe you messed up so bad that you wanted to give up. And maybe it's also true that none of those are your story. But you probably also get the point and hopefully can identify with it. When we mess up big, we can get scared. So scared that we want to turn aside from our goals and our principles and our beliefs about what's good. And this can be true in the gym or at home or at school or at work. And it can be true when it comes to following God. It can be true when it comes to following God as well. In fact, this is the exact circumstance that the people of God are in 1 Samuel 12, which we just read. So we're going to pick up today in verse 19 of this because I preached verses 6 through 18 as the intro to this whole sermon series. So you can go back and listen to that if you would like to. But we're just going to hang out at the end of this chapter today in verses 19 through 25, and we're going to see God's people in a similar circumstance to the one I'm talking about. So if you will, read with me. Verse 19, 1 Samuel chapter 12. "And all the people said to Samuel, 'Pray for your servants to the Lord your God, that we may not die, for we have added to all our sins this evil, to ask for ourselves a king.'" So this request for Samuel to pray, so they're asking Samuel to pray, and this request came about after Samuel had stood before them and declared his blamelessness before them. You guys just heard that as we read aloud a moment ago. So they've just agreed with Samuel that he, as their leader, had been blameless. And then Samuel recounted how God rescued his people from Egypt and how they had responded again and again, not by obeying God, but by forgetting God and turning aside from him until things got so bad, at which time they would just call out to God again. And Samuel reminded them that this had continued not only from when they were first freed from Egypt, but it had continued over hundreds of years and generation after generation at this point. And it had continued into the very moment that Samuel was speaking to them. Right? We know that because they rejected God as king and instead had asked for an earthly king. And God had now given them their heart's desire in Saul, their earthly king. And Samuel tells them that they can be faithful to God from here forward. If they do so, it will go well for them. But if they don't do so, the Lord's hand will be against them. And then Samuel says this, and you heard this, but I want to repeat it. He said, "Now therefore stand still and see this great thing that the Lord will do before your eyes. Is it not wheat harvest today?" And then Samuel calls upon the Lord so that God will send thunder and rain so that the people will know and see their wickedness. The wickedness that came from them asking for a king. And then the Lord sent that thunder after Samuel called it down. And he sent that rain and all the people were now scared. So that's where we are in this story. But here's what we can miss, because few of us sitting here today are wheat farmers. I don't know your particular story maybe, but I don't think many of us are wheat farmers. And so we probably won't know this just off the top of our head, but this storm was not supposed to happen. It was the wheat harvest. It should have been dry. It was that time of year where it was supposed to be dry, not raining. So rain wouldn't have been expected. It would not have been forecast. This was a total and complete shocker of a storm. And Samuel said exactly what this storm was going to be for, what this thunder and this rain was going to be for. It was so that the people would know and see their wickedness, to know that their wickedness was great because they had asked for this king. So that's the background. This awful storm that would have threatened the wheat harvest coming when it wasn't supposed to rain. And I tell you all that to tell you that when the people asked for Samuel to pray for them, they were asking, and we can see it here, it was so that they would not die. They're asking because they've now seen their wickedness. They've seen who they are. And they feared the Lord after the Lord sent this thunder and the Lord sent this rain. They've seen who God is and they've seen who they are, and that is scary. They realize that they've added this sin of asking for an earthly king on top of all the other sins of their lives. We can notice the wording. It says, "We have added to all our sins this evil, to ask for ourselves a king." So what they're saying is they have this track record of sin, and now they put this huge one on top of it. It's like they didn't just have a bad math test. They had a bad math test after not turning any homework assignments for the whole quarter. So they've added to all their other sins with this evil, and the consequences are serious. They're obvious too. Now, this is also what happens to us when we come before the Lord on Sundays, right? And any day we come before the Lord, but when we gather on Sundays, we have this time of confession each Sunday. It's because we've seen the Lord and we've seen who we are in contrast to him. And so we see his holiness and we see our depravity. And that's why we have this time of confession each week here. We see who God is and we're fearful, because we also have seen who we are and how we have that week, that day, this morning added to our sins. And we know what these people know right here in 1 Samuel, that based on who we are, death is the right outcome, the natural outcome. And there's nothing we can do to change it. So like me, the night of my car accident, these people know they've messed up. And now there's this tendency to want to give up. In verse 20, Samuel says this, "Do not," and Samuel said to the people, "Do not be afraid. You have done all this evil. Yet do not turn aside from following the Lord, but serve the Lord with all your heart. And do not turn aside after empty things that cannot profit or deliver, for they are empty." For a second, just think about how peculiar Samuel's response is here. He doesn't laugh off their sin. He doesn't say it's not a big deal. So he's not making light of it. He doesn't call their sin something other than what it is. Instead, Samuel says, "Do not be afraid. You have done all this evil." So if you're like me, you look at it and you go, that doesn't make sense, because they should be afraid, right? They should be terrified. We know Samuel knows that they've done all this evil because he says it, "You have done all this evil." So we know Samuel knows that they deserve God's judgment, not God's kindness. So then we think, how can he say, "Do not be afraid"? How can he say that? And even more, Samuel says, "Do not turn aside from following the Lord." They've already turned aside though. So isn't it all over for them? Shouldn't they just throw up their hands? They can't pull this whole thing off of following God and have instead just made things worse and worse for themselves. So how can Samuel say what Samuel says here? He says, "Serve the Lord with all your heart." Beyond him saying it, how can they serve the Lord with all their heart? Even if they hear him, how can they do it? Because they know who they are and it doesn't add up. But Samuel goes on and he just repeats this phrase. See, he says, "Do not turn aside." And he says it twice here. When he said it in verse 20, he said, "Do not turn aside from following the Lord." And then he says it again in verse 21. He says, "Do not turn aside after empty things that cannot profit or deliver, for they are empty." So the God's people, the Israelites, are now in this position. They're now in this situation where they've messed up so bad in following God. And they're afraid. And now there are all these other things in the world that make them all these promises. Now, we're not actually sure that he wrote it, but J.K. Chesterton is often quoted as saying, "When man stops believing in God, he doesn't then believe in nothing. He believes in anything." See, Chesterton says that, but Samuel says this. Samuel, in the scriptures here, says that the any things that we're tempted to believe are all empty things. That the any things that we're tempted to believe are all empty things. So when we turn away from God, all the other offers are of empty things. They're of empty things. And Chesterton says that those empty things become really believable for us when we don't believe God. And this is a problem because we read here that these empty things cannot profit us or deliver us because they're empty. And so what this means for our situation is that it becomes really easy after we've messed up for us to believe anything. But it's also impossible for those things to satisfy. It's impossible for them to satisfy. Because their relief and the relief and release that they offer is restricted by their emptiness. So when Samuel's saying this to them, he's certainly talking about their worship of other gods. He's talking about them participating in other religions and how that's all empty. But still, we in our day also need to realize all the promises that are made to us about irreligious gods, right? Irreligious gods in our world that offer escape and money and power and intimacy and pleasure and safety. All you've got to do is think about the spam folder in your Gmail account. Think of the irreligious gods that are making promises in your life. There are so many things making so many empty promises to us, and when we've messed up, and when you've messed up and I've messed up, and when we're afraid, and when we want to turn aside, there are all these things that are shouting approval at us. They're promising satisfaction and control and escape, and that it can all be ours, but every promise outside of God is empty. And so what do we do? How do we believe that these empty things are not our only option when we've messed up so bad? How do we believe that these empty things aren't our only option when we know that we've messed up so bad that God should be done with us? How can we not be afraid? How can we not turn aside? We can believe it because of what's written in verse 22. For the Lord will not forsake his people for his great name's sake, because it has pleased the Lord to make you a people for himself. So no matter what else is, God is not empty. His promises are secure and will be fulfilled. See, God is full where everything else is empty, and God offers and provides true safety and true satisfaction and true salvation. And Samuel says it here, the Lord will not forsake his people. That's amazing, and I hope you hear that today. I hope you hear that today. I hope you believe that today, and I hope you go and tell it to other people today, because it's a life-changing, eternity-altering truth. The Lord will not forsake his people. But the reasoning behind that is where this gets very interesting for us, and it's also where it gets super solid for us. And it's the reasoning behind, it's where Samuel says, and it's why he can say, that even when the people had added another sin to their life of book of sins, he can still say, the Lord does not forsake you. And here's what makes that promise so secure. God will not forsake his great name's sake, or will not forsake for his great name's sake. See, God's not forsaking us is about who God is, not about what we have done. God's people were made God's people because of grace, not because of our works. And being God's people has never been about our goodness, but has always been about his goodness. So God will not forsake because it has pleased him to make you a people for himself. That's why you cannot be afraid. That's how we cannot be afraid. That's why you cannot turn aside. That's how we cannot turn aside. It's because God is pleased with his people. God is pleased with his people. God is pleased we are his people. He loves his people. He loves us. He loves that his people are his people. This means that God is pleased with us and will not forsake us. And that's how Samuel can say those two things that seem very wild in the context of this story, which is, do not be afraid and do not turn aside. It's because the Lord will not forsake his people. The Lord will not forsake his people. He'll not forsake us. But Samuel doesn't only tell that to other people. He doesn't only say that and then forget about himself. He himself vows not to turn from the people or sin against the Lord in verses 23 to 25. Samuel says, moreover, as for me, far be it from me that I should sin against the Lord by ceasing to pray for you. And I will instruct you in the good and the right way. Only fear the Lord and serve him faithfully with all your heart. For consider what great things he has done for you. But if you still do wickedly, you shall be swept away, both you and your king. See, Samuel's saying that it would be a sin against God for him to stop praying for the people. It would be a sin against God for him to stop instructing the people. What's cool here is that God is so wrapped up in his people's good that he's invested in them by giving Samuel's care and instruction to them. And Samuel will keep praying and instructing them even though that they have a king now. Is it not a beautiful thing that God gave Samuel to his people for this? Like, they needed to hear this, and God had given them Samuel. And he had given them Samuel for the years and years and years before. And God gives us instructors too. And our position is not quite the same as Samuel's. But that does not change the fact that God has sent you and God has sent me into one another's lives and into the lives of many around us in our daily routines and in our rhythms, so that we would instruct people on how to follow the Lord. He's given each of us people to instruct, to serve that way, which means we all have some people, whether friends or family or neighbors or coworkers, and we're responsible for praying for and instructing in the same things that Samuel tells the Israelites here. He tells them this in these verses: fear the Lord and serve him faithfully with all your heart. For consider what great things he has done for you. Hear that again. Only fear the Lord and serve him faithfully with all your heart. For consider what great things he has done for you. See, that's how we are not afraid. When we really mess up and when we really want to give up, it's to consider what great things God has done for us. That's how we do not turn aside to empty things. Considering what God has done for us. That's how. We just have to consider what great things God has done. And as we tell others about those things, as we tell them what God has done, we get reminded ourselves, so it's good for us. And as we remind ourselves, we just tell others more. And so it's this thing where what we really just need to do is get all wrapped up in considering what God has done for us and talking about it all the time. So, as we close today, let's just consider what great things God has done for us. This, not our own strength and not our own wisdom and not our own hard work, is going to be how we keep from turning aside from God. This is how we will not turn to empty things. And it's considering what God has done. So while we would be foolish to turn away from God, we have given him every reason to turn away from us. Our intentions, our attitudes, our actions all turn from God to empty things constantly. And this isn't new to us. It's been true since our first parents, Adam and Eve, in the garden. And it's been true even today. Yet, while we have turned aside from him, God did not turn aside from us. Instead, Jesus Christ stepped in to our place, taking our sins upon his innocent flesh so that we could be God's people. Jesus did not turn from us, even when it meant going to the cross to bear our sins. Jesus did not turn from us when he was nailed to that cross to be crushed for our iniquities. Jesus did not turn from us when one by one his disciples turned away from him. Jesus did not turn from us then. He did not. And now through faith in him, God will remember our sins no more. That's the good news. Jesus doesn't turn aside from you today, and he won't on that day when he returns. The Lord will not forsake you. He won't do it. Let's see him on that cross and know that Jesus saves us. So let's hope in him. Let's believe in him, and let's know that in all the ways the things of this world are empty, Jesus is full. He saves and he satisfies. Unlike the ever-lessening satisfaction that this world offers, Jesus never decreases. And he never will. We will never reach the end of his goodness and his glory. So let's consider what great things he has done. Let's fear him alone. Let's serve him faithfully. And let's forsake empty things, because God does not forsake us.